Tonight we're going to continue our study through the book of 1 Samuel, and we're going to conclude chapter 16 and then make our way into chapter 17 tonight. We know that David was handpicked by God to be the next king over his people. And David did not rise to this position by chance. God had prepared David for this big task. David becoming king was years in the making. In fact, the process takes us all the way back to the beginning of David, all the way back to those verses from Psalm that Brian read for us earlier. "For you formed my inward parts." This is a psalm of David. David understands that God was the one who created him, that God is the one who blessed him with all the abilities that he had. "You wove me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the depths of the earth. Your eyes have seen my unformed substance, and in your book were all written the days that were ordained for me, when as yet there was not one of them." Our story of David goes all the way back to his conception, all the way back to this moment in time when David was created. God ordained that David would have certain characteristics that would enable him to be successful as his king. He ordained that David would be strong and handsome. He ordained that he would be prudent and brave. Just as Paul was God's specific vessel chosen to reach out to the Gentiles, so David had a specific work set apart for him. And David knew that the Lord had been present at his conception and had arranged for his genetic makeup. David was God's prepared servant to accomplish his purposes for his people. That's what we're going to see in 1 Samuel 16 and 17. So let's start in chapter 16, verse 14. "Now the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord terrorized him. Saul's servant then said to him, 'Behold now, an evil spirit from God is terrorizing you. Let our Lord now command your servants who are before you. Let them seek a man who is a skillful player on the harp. And it shall come about when the evil spirit from God is on you, that he shall play the harp with his hand, and you will be well.' So Saul said to his servants, 'Provide for me now a man who can play well and bring him to me.' Then one of the young men said, 'Behold, I have seen a son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, who is a skillful musician, a mighty man of valor, a warrior, one prudent in speech, and a handsome man, and the Lord is with him.'" Now this description of David that the servant is giving to Saul, all of this came from God. We need to remember to thank God for the abilities that he's given us, for the talents that we have. So Saul, he sent messengers to Jesse and said, "Send me your son David, who is with the flock." Jesse took a donkey loaded with bread and a jug of wine and a young goat and sent them to Saul by David his son. Then David came to Saul and attended him, and Saul loved him greatly, and he became his armor bearer. Saul sent to Jesse, saying, "Let David now stand before me, for he has found favor in my sight." So it came about whenever the evil spirit from God came to Saul, David would take the harp and play it with his hand, and Saul would be refreshed and be well, and the evil spirit would depart from him. At this moment in time, Saul was still in office. He was still king over Israel. But God had set his sights on David to be his new king. Saul, he wasn't fit any longer to lead the nation. Samuel had broken fellowship with him. You remember last week, Samuel was grieving over Saul so long that God finally told him, "Samuel, it's time to move on. There's more work to be done." What follows next is God departing from Saul. The Spirit of the Lord departs from him just as it had entered David. Now it leaves Saul. God's people were going to be okay because there was a new man who was going to be in charge over the nation. We see what God did to get David ready for this assignment. And we look at what was going on with Saul. You know, Saul was struggling. Saul's attendants, they knew that something was seriously wrong with their king, and they rightly attributed it to an evil spirit attacking him. When David was anointed king by Samuel, the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him. That's where we left off last week in chapter 16. The very next words we read in Scripture reveal that the Spirit of the Lord at that very moment departed from Saul. So God permitted this evil spirit to trouble Saul as part of his punishment for the king's rebellion. It's not so much that God had left Saul. It's actually the other way around. Saul had left God. Saul's priorities were not in line with God. He was not obeying him. He was not following his lead. And so as a result of that, God withdrew from him. Saul became a suspicious man, a revengeful man. His corrupt heart gave the evil spirit opportunity to work. The one man in the kingdom who was prepared to minister to King Saul was none other than David. David, the shepherd. David, this young boy who had been anointed the next king over Israel. We need to understand that David was more than a boy with a staff in his hand, leading sheep around day by day. There was a lot more to David than that picture some of us have. Even before he became king, people knew about him. The servants, the way they described him to King Saul, shows us there was so much more to David than just being out with the sheep. People today might use the term Renaissance man to describe David. He was a poet, a musician, skilled at playing the harp, great at composing songs. We read through the Psalms. Some of you are doing that here in January. And so many of these come from David, from his heart, from his mind. By the end of his life, he had composed numerous psalms. It's unusual to find such artistic talent in a man who was also so rugged as a soldier and a fearless general. You look at all of these qualities, all of these characteristics that he had. He was a great musician. He was a great poet. He was able to go out and lead people successfully in battle. He was a man of valor. All of this came from God. Now, David had to make the choice to follow God, but we see him equipped from the womb to be this man that God wanted to lead Israel. No matter how you examine his life and abilities, you find David to be a very unique individual. And he was that way because God had made him that way. It was actually David's musical ability that introduced him to King Saul, introduced him into the royal court. Next, he was promoted to military service. The opportunities of life that were presented to David matched his talents. As we move through life day in and day out, we're going to have opportunities. This morning, we were given another opportunity to sign up to serve in ministries. I appreciated Hunter's prayer this morning as we ended service because it was a reminder of the responsibility that we have to step up and serve, and also a challenge to expand ourselves beyond what we may be comfortable with. We all have talents, but we need to continually develop our talents. The talents that God has given us, they come from God, but we need to develop ourselves day in and day out. When I look at Matthew 25, the parable of the talents, there's always three thoughts that come to my mind about our abilities. We need to acknowledge our talents. David knew he was blessed. He knew he had some talents that came from God. We likewise need to do that. We also need to develop our talents. And then finally, use our talents. Put them in service in God's kingdom. And that's what David did. Every day we'll have opportunities to serve God. Whether you signed a ministry form this morning or not, you're going to have ministry opportunities tomorrow. What will we do when they come our way? Will we use our talents? Will we use our gifts to reach out and serve others? God will never ask us to do something that we're not capable of doing. I think that's true of individuals. I also believe it's true of the church. God expects us as His people to do certain things. And I believe within this assembly, we have all of the talents we need to accomplish God's will. We have everything that we need to reach out to this community, everything that we need to make a difference in Norman, Oklahoma, in Purcell, wherever we live. David, he was always concerned about God, concerned about his will. And at the top of David's list, I believe at this point in his life, was a desire to have relationship with God. Just as he refused to wear Saul's armor when facing Goliath, so he rejected anything that wasn't in line with God's will. And that's a lesson for us. There are things we're going to have to reject, things we're going to have to say no to as we live for Christ day in and day out. Now, there's two sides to that street. Christianity is more than what we say no to. It's also about what we're for, what we need to say yes to. But there are certain things that we need to refuse. David refused Saul's armor. David refused anything that went against God's will. There's some words from Psalm 23 that David penned that come to mind. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. That's what David desired from God. That relationship where God was guiding him and leading him in such a beautiful way. Our Father is always willing to lead us. David was special because he was willing to follow. Why was David so successful? The compliment that always comes to mind when we think of David, this man after God's own heart. How did he receive that compliment? Why was he successful as a king? Well, think about this question. What does it take for us to be successful in the eyes of God? Verse 18 that we read, to me, holds the answer. We have this description of David, the talents that he has. But the best thing that this servant said about David was that last line, the Lord is with him. When the servants were describing David to King Saul, here's this man who can come in and minister to you. Here's a man who's gifted when it comes to musical instruments. He can play this harp for you. It will comfort you. You have this man who's a warrior, a man of valor. He's willing to go out and fight for what's right. All of that is great, but all of that is nothing without this last line. The Lord is with him. If we want to be successful in life, we need to make sure we have that in our lives, that we have relationship with God. Because you can remove that phrase, and you can have all of these wonderful talents that David might have possessed. But without that last line, it doesn't mean anything. And as we examine our talents, what we're blessed with, people in here are blessed with great athletic ability. You're blessed with great business skills, with great people skills, able to accomplish so much professionally. Our college students working to get their degrees, to go out and make a difference in this world. But if we don't have that last line, what do we really have? We need God in our lives. And that's why David was successful. It's why Joshua was successful. It's why Samuel was successful. It's also the basis for success in Christianity today. We need God. The Lord desperately wants to be with his creation. He wants a relationship with us just like he had with David. David knew his gifts. He knew his talents. And he used those to build up God's kingdom. As long as he followed the Lord, God blessed him. And David was a tremendously blessed man. When we look at the first encounter that Saul had with David, it's interesting how that relationship is described. We know what's going to follow. We know there's going to come a time when Saul is going to try to kill David once he learns that he's the anointed to take his place. But here initially, did you notice how Saul felt about David? This was before he knew about David being the next king. But Scripture says to us that Saul loved David. He had no awareness that this man would soon take his place. That initial love that Saul felt would gradually be replaced with envy and fear. And those feelings eventually drove Saul to try to kill David. Saul, one day, would view David as an enemy. David never viewed Saul that way. He always viewed Saul as God's anointed. He behaved wisely, prudently, when it came to Saul. Now, when you look at Saul's life and David's life, at this point in time, as we close out chapter 16, before we move into chapter 17 that we know so well, the story of David and Goliath, here at the end of chapter 16, take a look at Saul, and take a look at David. Saul was a wreck. He was a total mess. His life was not in a good place. His mind was not in a good place. Without God, his life had spiraled out of control. Without God, he failed. And so you look at Saul's life and the point that he had reached, this valley that he was in. And you contrast that with David. Here's a man about to go out to bring this great victory for God and for Israel. And it's all because God was with him. God always makes the difference. And that leads us into chapter 17. Let's look at verses 1 through 4. We're just going to set the groundwork tonight for this battle that we know so well. We're not going to make it all the way through this chapter, but let's set the scene here as we move through this chapter over the next couple of weeks. Now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle, and they were gathered at Socoh, which belongs to Judah. And they camped between Socoh and Azekah and Ephes Damon. Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and camped in the valley of Elah, and drew up in battle array to encounter the Philistines. The Philistines stood on the mountain on one side, while Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, with the valley between them. Then a champion came out from the armies of the Philistines named Goliath. The battle scene is painted clearly for us here in 1 Samuel. We see what's going on. Israel, once again, they're faced off with their old nemesis, the Philistines. And so as you picture this battle, over here you have the Israelites are over here on top of one mountain. So you have the Israelite armies positioned over here, ready to go and fight. Kind of ready to go and fight. Over here you have the Philistines on the other mountain. And the Philistines are fired up. They're ready to go because they have Goliath. They have their champion. They have their giant. So picture this scene in your mind. Two armies positioned on two different mountains. In this valley in between. The fighting ground. Now the Philistines, they knew who they were going to send out to represent them. They had Goliath. The Israelites, they really didn't have anybody. David at this point wasn't a permanent fixture in Saul's army at this particular point in time. He traveled back and forth between the camp and home as he was needed, as he was called to minister to Saul. That's what verse 15 tells us. David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's flock at Bethlehem. So he was kind of in and out of the picture. Whenever he was called to help Saul, he left his flock and hurried to the camp. It wasn't until after David killed Goliath that Saul took him permanently to be one of his armor bearers. David, he was a spirit-led man. And every decision that he made had to line up with the will of God and for the glory of God. Others might come and go as they please, but David, he was guided by the hand of God. And we see God's guidance throughout his life, certainly in this battle. You see the difference God makes when you read 1 Samuel 17. If you want the full picture of what God can do, we conclude chapter 16 with Saul in a mess. His life is wrecked. And then we get to chapter 17 when Israel was in a pinch. And it's God who makes the difference because of David's relationship with him. Now, Goliath, he's described to us as standing 9 feet, 9 inches tall. It's pretty big. It's a giant. I followed the NBA through the years. I remember a basketball player back in the 80s by the name of Manute Bol. He was 7'7". He was from Africa. And just seeing him out there on the court, it was amazing how tall he looked. He made Shaquille O'Neal look small as far as height. And Shaquille O'Neal was 7 foot tall. 7 foot seven. Goliath was 2 feet taller than that. He was wearing armor that weighed 125 pounds. And he carried a spear that weighed 15 pounds. He was definitely a formidable opponent. basically the weight of his armor was David. Imagine Goliath walking around with David here plastered to his chest as his armor. That's basically what you see with the weight of Goliath's armor that he was carrying. And so Goliath, he would come out and present himself to the army of Israel each morning and each evening. And he did this for 40 days. And apparently David arrived on the final day. Jesse, he chose the right day to send David to the battlefield to carry food supplies to his brothers and their commanding officers. And that's the scene that's painted for us in verses 17 through 19. Jesse sends David out to the battlefield to provide food for his brothers who are out there as part of the Israelite armies. So David arrives here at the scene, and he sees what's going on, and he hears what's going on. He sees Goliath walk out each morning. He sees Goliath walk out in the... I don't even know if he waited that long, but he sees him walk out once. And he hears him make these taunts against the nation of Israel. And there was a lot at stake. We need to understand what's going on here. Why Israel is so afraid. We have to go to verses 8 and 9. And when you read these verses, you'll see why the Israelite army was so scared. Why they were so timid. Why nobody wanted to go out there and fight Goliath. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel and said to them, "Why do you come out to draw up in battle array? Am I not the Philistine and you servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me." Now look at verse 9. "If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall become our servants and serve us." That's what's at stake here. If the Israelites could provide a champion that could defeat Goliath, the Philistines would become their slaves. If not, if Goliath prevailed, then the Israelites would be slaves. Everybody in the Israelite camp, they were terrified. They were afraid. None of the trained soldiers, none of these men who have been prepared for battle, none of the generals, not even King Saul himself, was willing to go out and fight Goliath. Goliath actually made it personal with Saul. He says, "Are you not servants of Saul?" But Saul, he didn't want anything to do with Goliath. When the Israelite camp heard these words, they didn't rally to fight. They didn't rally to battle. They cowered down in fear. So we have the Israelites on one side of the mountain. You can imagine how they're feeling. They're in full crisis mode. Aware of this, Saul, he makes a generous offer to the man who would silence Goliath. Whoever would step up and go out and successfully defeat Goliath, he could marry one of the king's daughters. He would also receive great riches. Now this next one might be the one that motivates us to go out and fight somebody like Goliath. His father's house would be taken off the tax rolls. "I'll go. Let me fight." So Saul is trying to get somebody to have the courage to go out and fight Goliath. David's response to Goliath's arrogant speech was that of total disgust. When David arrived at the battle scene and he heard and saw what was going on, it disgusted him. Who was this uncircumcised Philistine who was blaspheming God and taunting his people? Now keep in mind, the Israelite army, all of these soldiers gathered there, including David's brothers, they had heard these taunts for 40 days and 40 nights, and still they weren't moved to action. They listened to Goliath go out there and ridicule God, mock them, and nobody was moved to go out there and fight. David wouldn't listen to it for one day. And they had listened to it for 40 days and 40 nights. David, he was willing to fight for God. Sometimes I wonder if the Israelite army had grown accustomed to the taunts. After 40 days, maybe they just expected Goliath to walk out there again and say what he was going to say, and then walk back to his camp, come back in the evening, walk out and say what he was going to say, and then go back. Tolerating evil can become a habit. It can become a habit in our lives. We can tolerate sin so much that it takes over our heart. It takes over our mind. When David reached this battle scene, immediately he knew this isn't right. What's going on here? This is wrong. And sometimes we can become so desensitized to sin that we're accepting things that are evil, sinful, because we just grow accustomed to it, day after day, living this life of sin. David had to be shocked that no soldier was willing to fight. He had to be surprised that nobody was willing to go out and take on Goliath. He had to be dismayed that there wasn't anybody in the camp willing to put an end to this nonsense. When David reached the battle scene, here are some things he didn't see. Here are some things he didn't find. He saw no courage, no honor. He didn't find any integrity. None of those qualities were found at the battle scene. This is what he found: a bunch of men fleeing from the battle lines at the very side of the giant. Even King Saul was terrified. You see, that's what happens to us when we don't have God in our life. Because we're going to face giants. That giant might come in the form of illness. It might come in the form of a family struggle. It might come in the form of disappointment, loss of a job. We're going to face giants. And if we don't have God in our life, we're just going to cower down in fear. God had brought David to the camp for such a time as this, and he was ready to battle. He was ready to accept the challenge. King Saul made a mistake that we so often make. He was walking by sight and not by faith. The Israelite army, they made this same mistake. They looked out there at Goliath. They saw this physical specimen, and they thought to themselves, there's no way one of us can take him. Saul and the Israelites were looking at the obstacles. They looked across the way, and they saw this imposing giant. If you go back to that battle scene that I painted for you, two armies on each mountain, and then a valley in between. I believe the Israelites were spending so much time looking down in that valley, looking down at that giant, when they should have spent some more time looking up to God, their Father. That's what David did. That's where he got the strength to win this battle. That's why David, at this very moment, when he heard these taunts against his father, he's ready to take action. Now listen to this. David, he did not know Goliath's strength. He did not know how much Goliath could bench press. I don't think he had a tape measure and ran out and measured how tall Goliath was. I don't think David knew how big, how strong that armor was that Goliath was carrying. I don't believe he knew how much it weighed. I don't think he knew how much any of that armor that Goliath was carrying weighed. He didn't know Goliath's full strength. And he didn't need to, because he knew God's strength. And Goliath, no matter how strong he was, he paled in comparison to God. Like I told you, we're going to face giants in our life. The giant might come in the form of many different things. And all of these things may try to bring us down. We might even feel that we're going to be destroyed. It's impossible to measure the strength of a temptation. It's impossible to measure the strength of an individual trial. It's impossible to measure how difficult an illness might be for one person to battle through. How could we possibly measure the strength of every obstacle we'll face? And we don't have to. Because if we know God's strength, that's all we need to know. If we know God's strength, every giant we face will fall before us. And that's what we'll see over the next couple of weeks. David going out, taking on this giant, bringing victory to Israel. That victory was really God's victory. And tonight we have the opportunity to have an amazing victory that only God can provide. If you need to be baptized into Christ, or if you need the prayers of your church family, let God do what only He can do. If you have a need, come now as we stand and sing together.